Welcome to the Blue Collar Nation podcast, the podcast dedicated to making the lives of blue collar business owners better. Before we start the show, may we ask you for a quick favor? Eric and Larry work very hard at delivering the best free content possible. Please help them out by going to iTunes and subscribing, and please leave them a five-star review. Also, feel free to share the podcast with your friends and peers. Now, on to the show.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Larry from the Blue Collar Nation podcast, and I'm here with my intrepid business partner, the Tech Whisperer, Mr. Eric Sprague. What's up, Eric? How are you today?
It's like the 19th time you've called me intrepid.
Yeah, I kind of like it. It kind of has, you know.
I'm buying, you know, I know what I'm getting you for Easter, a thesaurus.
I use the thing constantly, and, you know, sometimes it sends me in the wrong direction, but it's all good.
Thanks,
well, it's
man.
Wonderful to see you today, and hopefully everybody's looking forward to enjoy your wonderful insight. And I want to present that our sponsor today is Morning Tech Meeting. And Morning Tech Meeting, as we always talk about in the beginning of the podcast for a moment, is our company that trains your technicians in soft skills so that you can work on your business and not in your business. And many times we don't talk about that we had a service business for 10 years and the difference that these soft skills made that you were teaching our technicians changed our business. And we didn't have to supervise them as much. We didn't have to watch them as much. And they became much more independent and confident. And they could deal with the clients and the problems that happen in the field without us jumping in and holding their hand to make things happen, which was a huge boost for our business. And we want to boost other people's businesses the same way. So anyway, go to morningtechmeeting.com, put your name and your email address in there, get a sample lesson, see what Eric's all about with his tech whispering training, and it'd be great to do business with you. So moving to the podcast, we have an amazing guest today, a regular and wonderful Mr. Bill Yaden of John Don. How are you today, Bill?
Well, if I was doing any better, I'd be intrepid like Eric, you know.
Oh, you know.
You have been intrepid because 1 minute you're in Colorado, the next I see you in Tampa. Like, you're intrepid much more than me.
Well, I'll tell you
all
what.
All over the place.
That's you got to get out there and experience life. You know, I've had both my shots. My wife's getting her second shot tomorrow. I'm still kind of doing the healthy thing, but I just don't want to be trapped in one place.
Yeah.
There's too much of the world to explore. You know?
I got my shot on Saturday, my first shot, and I was flat on my back for like 18 hours.
Really?
Boy, I was messed up.
It's amazing how everybody gets a little different on this. Even my second one, other than taking a nap in the afternoon, I was fine.
I was Eric's a little weak and sensitive, so you know he got beat up.
That means my immune system was strong, Larry. And
there you go.
Response.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
Run with that. Out any way I can. Yeah.
Yep.
Now I'm glad.
Knock yourself out.
I'm also glad to get my first shot going. So anyway, it is Bill's Blue Collar Book Club again for April. And I think we have a cool one this time because we didn't really do one book. We kind of did one author, and Bill's going to explain that a little bit. But we're going to delve into the work of Cal Newport, and I don't want to spoil it because Bill has put a lot of work into this. So, Bill, why don't you explain to everybody who Cal Newport is and why we should all care?
Okay. Well, you know, I think it's interesting when we were talking about our book selection for this month, Eric, you brought up the idea about Cal Newport. He said, Bill, you probably already read this book. And I said, I tried. You know, it was kind of like I did read it, or I did get through about half of it. And I think I listened to a podcast. I think it was from Tim Ferriss. And it was just too much for me. I couldn't go there. And so after you talked about it, I said, well, let's give it another shot. You know, so what I did was, of course, you know, he's written three books in the last since 2016. His first one was Deep Work, which is what we had discussed. His second one, which was like two years later, was Digital Minimalism. easy to say. Right? And his third one, which just came out at the end of 2020, may even have been in January, was called The World Without Email. And basically, there seemed to be a thread running through all three books. I look at them as a trilogy. And the idea was is that we, as we look at this subject of deep work, and we'll explain more about what deep work is, it's just the fact that we are so distracted these days where we can't seem to focus. And the word here is focus. And as we look at it, as the world's changing, the whole idea about being able to focus in the time when everybody else is just running, clicking, you got 18 tabs open on your computer. How do you get back and really focus where you can actually create what they call the deep work, which is something of long-term value? And so as we looked at that focus, I think that's probably why I had so much trouble originally with deep work, because of the fact I tend to be exactly one of the people he's trying to say, look at the trouble you're in. I have all those tabs open. You guys probably know that if you send me a text or a message, I respond pretty quickly.
Yeah, like a nanosecond, Bill.
Yeah, I know. It's
I'm always amazed by that, by the way. And I always get back to you like a day later and I feel super guilty.
Well, that's the whole idea, you know, and it is because I'm one of those people that have all those tabs open. I'm following Facebook. I'm following Twitter. I'm following just about everything and everybody. And the idea is that I'm skimming. You know, I'm really, and one of the big words they're talking about these days is that busyness versus productivity, right? And this is the big thing. You know, people go, they'll look and say, "Wow, you're so busy." Yeah, but I'm not getting anything done. And I think
it's mistaking activity for accomplishment.
Yes. Yeah. And some of the problems, you say, "Wow, you read a lot of books." And then I say, "Yeah, but I'm not sure how much I'm retaining from them." So,
or this even more time, so applying.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. I think Larry mentioned that last time when we did the interview on habits. I was really impressed. I mean, Larry was all over implementation. He would have made Howard very proud. I mean, he was Mr. I, you know, implementer himself, was all over. And I'm thinking, wow, Larry's really dug into this. I'd already read the book like 2 years ago. And
I can speak for this, Bill. The change in Larry from an out, you know, I mean, I'm in the insider outsider. Like I work with him, but I'm not him, right? And the change over time, he has worked so hard on becoming more intentional with the things that he does and his habits that I personally think it's changed his whole life. Not just work, but
everything. It's not easy.
Don't you think you're more aware? You're so much more aware.
Yeah. It's a lot of work because it's just planning and planning and planning. And it's out of my comfort zone totally. But, you know, it's a practice. It's like everything else. It's a practice. You just got to work on it. You got to work on it. Revisit the triggers that keep you going in the correct direction. And that's pretty much what I've been doing consistently. I use the Darren Daily Journal, which helps me with that. What's up, everybody? We are going to be at the Experience in Charleston, South Carolina. South Carolina, right, Eric?
Yeah, South Carolina.
There we go. And we are so excited. We hope you guys are going to make it there too. We had a killer podcast with Larry Cooper, who runs the show there. And what's the date on that? April? There's a whole week.
We should probably know the date if we're going to do it.
19th, 20th, and 21st. And then Howard's going to have an event on the 22nd. So we're going to be at that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, be Charleston, 19th, 20th, and 21st. And wear a mask if they need a mask. I don't know what the restrictions are going to be then. Howard, he's doing all kinds of cool things.
If you want to learn, listen to the podcast with Larry Cooper. He lays the whole thing out. Everybody has to wear a mask.
I bet you it could change by then. You never can tell.
Bullshit.
Okay, we're going to be at booth number 216 before we start discussing the necessariness of a mask or not.
Look,
booth 216.
If you're in the cleaning and restoration industry, be there. But, you know, I believe the trade show is only $10. So if you're in that area and you're a plumber, heater, heating, air conditioning, electrician, come by and say hi.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, there's stuff there for you.
Oh, there's so many things they're giving away there for everybody's going to be doing. And it's got all kinds of cool equipment in the industry for everybody. So come and say, hey, Charleston, South Carolina.
And then for guys who are listening, both Bruce DeLoach and Bill Yaden will be there. And Bill is in the booth next to ours. So you'll get to meet all those guys you hear on the podcast all the time.
Howard will be there. Who else will be there? I don't know. Larry Cooper will be there.
Cooper's
running the show. Yeah. So anyway, we'll see you guys. Stop by booth 216. It'll be a blast. Out.
But you know, just... Larry, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, man. Like, one of the things that you can, it goes both ways though. Like you two are similarly wired, right? So you're going, I'm Stephen Covey says I'm stuck in the thick of thin things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
But you know, I'm the other way and it can go just as poorly the other way. I can be so in my head and have so many deep thoughts that I never get to implement them. It's the same thing, just going the opposite direction. There has to be some happy medium to it. Because how many people do you know had all the greatest ideas, but none of them got implemented?
Yeah, well, the thing is, this other book, like The Digital Minimalism, there's so many concepts out of there that bring you closer to, you know, the habits bring you a part of the way there. Cal Newport brings you closer there. And, you know, you take a lot of this social media and all that stuff out of the loop. And all of a sudden you have this extra time to implement more of the things to get out of your head or make things happen. And it's so valuable when you just realize what's going on around you. And you're like, I don't have to do all this crap and I can get the things I want to get accomplished.
So Bill, what's Newport's thesis that what our problem is?
I think his problem is he looks at a couple different things. One is, of course, is that exactly I am the prototype of his problem guy. I have, I'm all over Facebook, right? And I'll use the excuse that I said, well, part of my job at John Donne is monitoring Facebook on the multiple different Facebooks that there are, right? Just to see, is something mentioned about John Donne or is there something I can help in a particular problem or issue as a John Donne person? And so that sounds good, but once again, it gets back to the busyness. He's saying basically the whole idea about deep work, you know, is that it is the stuff that we have to spend hours, you know, and he gives a bunch of different ways to break it up because not everybody can go off into a cabin and work for a week like Bill Gates does once a year. You know, he does that once a year and he just for 7 days, he just thinks his think week and reads great books and everything, but not everybody can do that. When we look at our industry, this is the hard part for us to discuss is that we don't have the type of an industry that we normally would spend hours and hours and hours by ourselves working on something. And part of a book is how do we get there? Even in an industry such as ours, which is a service industry, he's got plans for it. And a lot of it was just what Larry was just talking about is that scheduling of your time, realizing what is important in your life. What are the values? What are the goals you're trying to achieve? And are these digital tools that are available to us, are they benefiting us long-term in where we want to go with our life? And his whole idea is that, you know, is to get to deep work. And that's why I thought, even though he wrote deep work first, I thought digital minimalism was the tools to get to deep work. And then, of course, you get the last one, which is just about email. A few more steps there, but think about email. It's not fully formed out yet, but it is part of the problem.
Yeah,
I think in the book, they said that IBM as a company sends like 1.5 million texts a day or IMs. And so basically, if you're working in a company like that, all you do is react to all these things that are coming in. Every few seconds, there's another one. And every time you hear a ding, you're off, you know. Or Facebook's even worse. At least an IM, it's usually about business. On Facebook, you know, somebody just says, oh, click here. I'm driving down the street and I'm just talking to people.
Here's my great omelet that I just made.
Yeah. I get it. And I know this is hard because we have so many of our friends that are involved as administrators of various bulletin boards for Facebook. But boy, I'll tell you what, it's one of the things that just is distracting us way too much.
Yeah, but even those administrators, I don't think that those people would tell you to spend every minute of every day on their forum. You know, they'd say, well, get out there and go do some work. You know, the thing is, I mean, the majority of the people that listen to this podcast are most likely home service business owners. So we're talking about primarily to owners, but also managers, I think, listen to. And I think that applies to them. You know, if you're always in reaction mode, how are you ever going to get to where you really want to go? Because you don't even have the time to figure out where you want to go.
Yes.
You know, Larry and I have had issues with that in the past where, you know, Larry just loves to do. And I'd be like, okay, let's make a 1-year plan or a 5-year plan. I'm all about that. Right.
Yeah.
And Larry would be like, I don't know, dude, can we just do stuff? You know, and you're much less that way now, Larry, than you were before. But I mean, there was the infamous me throwing your BlackBerry in the swimming pool. incident, you know, where I was just getting frustrated because, you know, Larry didn't want to plan. And I felt that the only way to have a successful business was to try to begin with the end in mind. And not only professionally, but personally as well. And how many young people, I mean, Larry and I both have Generation Z kids. And he talks about that they're the first generation who basically don't even know life without a smartphone.
Yeah.
And their anxiety levels are off the chart. Their depression levels are off the chart. I mean, they're the great human experiment, honestly. Yep. And, you know, I was talking to my kids recently about this because one of my daughters was having a hard time with it. It was really taking a lot of her life away. And she started to recognize it. And, you know, we were having some issues and she has gone to an old school phone with no internet. And we shut our Wi-Fi off at the house now every night.
Oh,
because excellent. She literally came to us and was like, look, I can't handle it. I will somehow sneak down and get a laptop or your phone or whatever and go on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, I know I don't want to, but like he talks about, it's like digital heroin.
Yes. Yeah.
They're addicted to it. So I've been on both sides of the coin where, you know, I've seen firsthand what it can do to somebody. And I had a conversation with her. There's a point to this. I was saying, look, when I was 17, when I was your age, my day consisted of running around the woods, you know, with my buddies and at the beach. And I had all kinds of time to think about what I wanted to do with my life.
Yes.
Where I wanted to go, what I wanted it to look like. Goals. And, you know, she can now that she's kind of detached herself. But when this happened, she lived for literally the next notification.
Yeah.
And that's, they don't know that that's no way to live. So how do we overcome that?
Yeah. And I think that is hard because as you said, they've grown up with the smartphone. The smartphone is when everything changed, you know, because of the fact when we had our old flip phones, you know, we thought it was pretty cool just to have a phone that wasn't, you know, this big that you could just flip it open and call somebody, right? And then all of a sudden they started creating Facebook, started doing the like system, which they got from Friendster. They didn't even invent it. But I mean, that really has hurt the younger generation. I mean, to us, I'm, you know, at my age, I'm not that concerned about likes.
We can pull away more easily.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so, but it just.
Yeah, but imagine being 15.
Yes. I mean, it's the way they grew up. And what it's really done is it's destroyed communication. I mean, a bunch of likes does not add up to a true friend, a BFF, as they would say.
Yeah,
you know, so that's not going to be it.
And getting back to our world, it also has taken away, and Larry and I have experienced this firsthand running young people.
Yeah,
they don't want to interact with us face to face.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember Larry wanted to talk to one of our guys, and the guy kept texting him.
Oh my gosh.
And Larry would text back. Larry would text back, call me.
Yeah.
And he'd text again.
Yeah.
Larry texted back, call me. And then he'd text again because he's doing anything he can not to have a conversation.
That's right.
And Larry wrote, text me right now or call me right now or you're fired. and that's what it took to get this young person to engage. And, you know, and I also experienced that in interviewing. I was using an outside company to try to find us talent, but we would interview everybody. We're sending people into people's homes.
Yeah.
And nobody would show up for the interview. So I sat down with the company and I'm like, why are none of your people showing up? And they're like, well, you're interviewing and this generation doesn't want to interview.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, who gives a shit if they want to interview?
Yeah. That's,
I can't just hire you without meeting you, you know? And I think this is a real bad thing that's going on. I don't know.
It's definitely enough. And that's almost a whole separate entity other than what, although we face that in our industry because we have a lot of them in there. I think even the owners, somebody that, you know, has got a good business sense, I think they still fall prey to a lot of this stuff that we have the problem with. And I love the term, my favorite term, I think, out of the whole books is called attention residue. And we all think, you know, that if I'm working on something here and I see clicks up and you texted me or something, and maybe we're going to do something in a week or so. And the idea is that even if I just said, okay, hey, yeah, that's great, Eric. And, you know, we spend 30 seconds. It's probably going to take me 15 to 30 minutes to get back into what I was doing. The attention residue. I'm going to read the definition as it came because it's just too good.
Please.
It said, if we jump from task to task, it becomes impossible to give anything our complete focus. This limits our ability to do complex, deep thinking and problem solving, so we can never perform at our best. If someone has attention residue, they're essentially operating with part of their cognitive resources being distracted, and then can significantly harm their productivity and performance. And we all like to think that we can multitask, and there is no such thing. My best example of that is that you're driving down the interstate in an unfamiliar city. You're jamming to something on the, you know, listening to Spotify or whatever it is you're doing at this point in time, Sirius XM. And then all of a sudden, while you're singing Stairway to Heaven, you just saw the exit that you want to go. And now all of a sudden you turn down the music so that I can figure out where I'm going. Yeah. And you say, well, why are you doing that? Because I need to focus, right? There's that word again.
Yeah.
Focus is the issue. We have lost it totally, mostly because of exactly that. We think we can do much more than we can. Our brains just aren't set up for that.
I think many people aren't educated on that fact that multitasking is like this big thing. I mean, I was even guilty of it years ago before someone told me you should not multitask because it's like a pride thing. I know so many people that are so, whatever. So many people are so proud of that. Oh, I can multitask. I can juggle 10 things at the same time.
Yeah.
But you probably suck at everything.
Well, hold on, dude.
Exactly.
Come on. Yeah. You were that guy. Like, I mean, Larry would look me straight in the eye, Bill, and be like, I'm so good at multitasking. I'm juggling. Larry's saying
I was very good at it, but it wasn't effective.
Juggling means, Larry would say, dude, I would say, what are you doing? He goes, I'm juggling. And I'd be like, oh, so you're doing like 15 things poorly. Like in my head, that's what that looks like, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, to Larry's credit, he's changed, but you know, we all try to multitask because we're trying to get more done, but in the end, we get nothing done.
So I have a comment on that. Multitasking during certain times of the day when a lot of things are happening in the middle of the day, sometimes you have to do. But when you're going to stop and think and try and implement something thoroughly and put some focus on it, that's when you can't multitask. That's when you need to make that division and know the difference between the other. Because I sometimes will be multitasking. I have to stop doing it because I need to focus on one thing.
But you also, that's why you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to work when there are no distractions.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, I mean, you're very good about that. Larry's religious. 4 o'clock, he's sitting at that desk. And, you know, you're not going to get any phone calls before at least seven. So, so that constitutes constitutes Cal Newport's definition of deep work, right?
Yes. Yes.
Mind, Bill, if I read the definition of that? Because I think...
Yeah, go right ahead. Yeah.
So he says deep work is professional activities performed in a state of distraction-free concentration that push your cognitive capabilities to their limit. These efforts create new value, improve your skill, and are hard to replicate. And then he says 3 to 4 hours a day, ideally.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that reminds me of Gary Keller's One Thing book.
Yes.
That's what, that's no different. Gary Keller's book, which was a huge hit.
Yes,
it was. The One Thing. That's exactly what that is. He's saying, find out what's the one thing that can change your business or your life the most, and dedicate 3 to 4 hours a day to it.
Yep.
And then whatever you do after that is gravy.
Yeah.
Now, but Bill, here's where the rub is, right? For home service business owners who work 12 to 15 hours a day. And let's use residential service plumbers and water damage people as an example of somebody this would be really hard to do, right? Because a lot of us are on call a lot. Yes. How do you do that deep work when you're going to get that 2 a.m. phone call or you got to get to the shop at 5 a.m. to get everything ready for when they all roll in at 6:30 or 7?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
It goes back to that same thing. I think you got to set up what are the values and goals, right? And if my goals are creating this long-term successful company that runs by itself, which is a long term, of course, without my every moment being here to babysit. I mean, that's our real goal, is to create this business that funds my lifestyle, whatever I choose to have as my lifestyle. So in that 12 to 15 hours, if we all sat down and analyzed what we did during that time, I am sure we could find places where, well, do I really need to do that? Can I give that to one of my employees? Can I do this? And then we have to kind of go back and say, all right, I've been spending 20 minutes here on Facebook, right? Or other things. I think we really have to analyze what we're doing all day. We are not being productive, I can guarantee you, in that 12 to 15 hours. Those 15 hours are not all productive. Where am I not being productive? Where could I be more productive by pulling this time back, reassessing, is it valuable, and then putting that in small blocks? Now, I realize in the real world, especially, I just drove through Nashville, Tennessee on Saturday night, where they had 13 inches of rain, right, in 24 hours. And if you remember back, it wasn't that long ago, I think 2010, where they had the big flood, where that just flooded half the city. So, I mean, they've had this before. So if you're in Nashville, you know that your next couple of weeks are going to be hell. And you will not be doing deep work at that time. You're doing what? You're deep in water.
Well, I was going to say, you're going to do deep work, but not the kind we're talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's face it. Nothing is etched in stone, right? Other than if after you've gone through these books and really studied them, I think you will start to look at yourself and say, I know I'm a busy guy, right? But once again, are we going back to the busyness or the productivity? If I am truly being productive and it's all showing, then probably I shouldn't change anything at this point in my life or my career. If you're building this business, but let's say that at you guys, so you sold your business at the end of 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so at the end of 10 years, you had a totally different business than you had year one. I bet there was times where you could have said, oh, we can do this, we can do this, I can pull back from this or whatever. Or you just said, I can't do this anymore, and that's why we sold the business.
No, right? So, we weren't working nearly as much.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's where you got to look at it, where you're at in your career, to be so before you can really set up these things that, I just read this book, so I'm now going to pull 4 hours out each day. That's not practical.
Yeah.
No, you got to work up to it, and it has to be a practice. Yeah. It's the habit thing. You put the habits in your day,
yep,
and then you implement them.
or maybe you just like schedule it. You know, you tell exactly. Everybody, say you have, I don't know, a dozen employees or whatever, and you have some office staff, and you just say, look, everybody, every Friday afternoon from noon to five, I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
And I will have my phone, and don't call me unless somebody died or the building's on fire. For us, but you have to get them to buy in. And Larry and I think did a good job of this. We explained to everybody why we were spending time working on the business, because look, if we don't grow, then there's no room for opportunity for you. You can't move into a management position or, make more money in sales or whatever that position is. So you guys need to have our backs so that we can spend a certain amount of time every week working on this to make sure that it gets better. And if you talk about that enough and they like you and you have a good culture, they'll buy in and they'll actually watch your back. I mean, I can remember being in the office and having Leslie or Ashley look at me and be like, Eric, it's time for you to go. you gotta go.
They were looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks, Larry. But they were like, look, we know that this is your, whatever Wednesday afternoon at noon and it's 12:20 and you're still here, pretending to do working, I'm not really doing the work that's going to get us where we need to go.
Yeah.
I'm filling my time with busy work.
Yeah. And that's it. We're trying to get away from that busy work and get into the productivity type stuff, get rid of the distractions. One of the things I liked there was that he says, now the studies show that probably you cannot exceed about 4 hours of focus or deep work. Said your mind is just going to say, okay, that's enough. And he wants you to schedule that, what he calls his scheduled leisure. Said you need to get out there and do those other things, whether it's getting out on your bike. Eric, every time I see your picture, when you're up there in front of some mountain on your bike, you could just almost read into the picture that you just see this decompress. Right? Totally.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that's my thinking time. I think we've had this conversation. I don't think about anything when I bike.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what biking does is it empties the tank so that when I'm done with that,
that's right.
I actually have the space in my head to now think. Where Larry's the opposite. Larry comes up with most of his best ideas on the bike. Riding.
Yeah,
we're all different a little bit, but the thing's the same at the end. You get back from that bike ride or a walk or whatever that may be. But think about it. Riding is silent time.
Yes. And that's the whole idea they keep talking about. You got to have that space where nothing is interfering, whether that's on a bike or walking. I mean, in the book, you saw they had a couple people, that had these specific areas that they just walked like in a forest, and they may walk in a circle for a few hours, just getting that stuff. And that is just as important as a deep work.
Yeah. Steve Jobs did that. He was infamous for that.
Yeah.
He'd have his meetings on a walk with somebody. Yeah. Oh, he'd say, come on, we're walking.
He loved that. Yeah. And I think more people should do that.
Well, it's funny if you think about this too. And if you look at a group of, like, let's say you show up at the local group ride for, there's 50 cyclists there.
Yeah.
They're doctors and lawyers and engineers and accountants and like they're full, entrepreneurs. Like for some reason, I think endurance sports lends itself to successful people a lot of times. And I think that there's something to be said for all that alone time that while they're training.
Yes.
It gives them time to think. And I think that goes for swimmers and triathletes and runners or whatever else, hikers. Yep. You can't always be in the business.
No.
You see the guy, they end up, the guys who are in it all the time, they get really burned out.
Yeah. And they could be so much more effective.
Don't you find a lot of times it stunts their growth? The guys that have 30 trucks usually seem less stressed to me than the guy that has 5. Even though
They learn, they get over the hump, what the things to do, to have systems.
That and they're
they're spending a lot of time thinking about the business, don't you think? I mean, they're
They're not working in it; they're working on it.
Yeah. Well, they got to the point where they could. So.
Yeah.
I don't know where we're, you know, it's a little scary where this is going for younger generations, like the two younger than Larry and myself, because we're Gen X, and I know Bill, you're a boomer, and you know, do you think that they are going to have the ability to back off?
I think the ones that if they see the road to success, they will see that they have to back off, you know, and, you know, one of the other things they had after the leisure, they said that you've got to protect your rest. And we've talked about this in exercise and how important sleep is. Well, sleep and rest, you know, these guys, it's like Cal, he says he seldom works after 5 o'clock in the evening because he does such quality deep work time. He got what he needed to get, and he doesn't need this, what he likes to call the shallow work. You know, that's the definition you read, deep work. Shallow work, it says non-cognitively demanding, logistical style task, often performed while distracted. These efforts tend not to create much new value in the world and are easy to replicate. And some guys just stay at the office or something, and they do busy work, and they do shallow work. And then they go, look at, I worked 12 hours today. Well, yeah, you were there 12 hours, but did you do things that are going to get you to those long-term goals that you set up in your, you know, when you started this company?
I think Larry and I historically are both extremely guilty of that.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're working on it. It's a practice.
We're working on it, but we were the, you know, well, I'll just keep working, even if I'm not getting anything done, because we're hard workers. Like we always, growing up in New England too, the Northeast, it's like, it's preached that you have this New England work ethic and you just go, no matter how painful. But you know, I don't know if the marketplace rewards that as much anymore than it may have 50 or 60 years ago.
No.
You know?
No.
You know, smart is better. I'm sure it was then too.
Well, and I think this is part of the problem is that, as you know, he says in the books, is that we have come to believe now that anything that is digital must be better and must be a time saver and must be just wonderful. And all of a sudden, somebody like Cal comes out and writes his book and all of a sudden says, these things are not good, right? That you're talking about. He's kind of like a you know, some crazy man out in the woods yelling at you. And yet, you know, the guy seems to really be swimming upstream against what everything else is happening. And yet I truly believe he's really on track. Of course, that means that I really have to get turn my kayak around. I'm going the wrong way.
Well, what's interesting is that he's a professor of computer science, and yet he has no social media, barely uses his phone, and doesn't email very much.
No.
You know that. And then I have also read many articles where you guys, like Steve Jobs, wouldn't let his kids have an iPad or an iPhone, or you know, a lot of Silicon Valley tech CEOs don't let their kids use social media. Well, what's that telling us?
Yeah, the guys that are making it, you know,
it's kind of a scary thing. It's like the guy who owns the sugar factory but doesn't let his kids eat sugar.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
So, all right, well, let's get into practical application so that we can give, as Larry loves to say, tips and tricks.
Tips and tricks. Just don't say that to Michael Gerber. We're all good.
Did you ever hear that story, Bill, about Michael
Gerber? No, I don't think so.
Oh, Larry, you got to tell a story.
He was on Cristiano, had Michael Gerber, and who else was the other guy, the plumbing master?
I can't remember his name. Ken Goodrich.
Ken Goodrich. And they were talking, and Cristiano says, what's the name of his podcast, Eric? I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Sharpest Tool?
No.
No, that's Scorpion. I don't know.
Anyway, it was a great podcast. So Chris Yano, the host, said, tips and tricks.
Point. To the point. I'm sorry.
He said, we have some tips and tricks here. And Michael Gerber went nuts. These are not, I do not present tips and tricks. And he totally chewed. And Michael Gerber is a legend, you know, his book.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And, you know, E-Myth Revisited. And he chewed out Chris. It was the greatest podcast moment.
I do not do tips and tricks.
Tips and tricks. He was so grumpy. And his Jewish old guy came out aggressive. And it was classic. I sent Chris a message immediately. It was the best podcast I heard in a long time.
So, he addresses that on Rich Roll's podcast. Anybody that's listening, Rich Roll podcast, if you just type in Rich Roll, Cal Newport, it will come up. But he talks about, because Rich Roll's like, how do we fix it? And Cal Newport's like, well, they kind of forced me, the book, they kind of forced me into a 30-day, thing.
Yes, yeah.
But, he was, his point, I think, his overarching point was, you kind of might have to use some tips and tricks to get going, but you really have to change your philosophy about how you feel about your life to make it stick.
Yes.
And he used the example of, whether somebody's paleo or they're vegan or whatever, that's not a short-term thing. That's a philosophy that a person that decides to do that buys into and then does it for the rest of their life or a long period of time. And I think his overarching point was that we have to adapt that kind of thing. You have to know what you're getting out of it to want to quit.
Yes. Yes.
So what are you doing? And Bill, you said this is a problem for you, right? So upon reading this, what are your, I'd like to go around all three of us. Like, what are our thoughts about trying to fix it? Cause we all have the same problems.
Yeah. I have so much to choose from, I'm thinking number one is I don't keep my phone in the room anymore because my phone beeps a lot at night. And that drives my wife crazy. All right. So either the phone goes out or I go out. Right? So that's first step.
That's an easy thing to figure out. Huh?
Yeah. And I, the other day, I forget which one was on. I was setting up something and I said, okay, I want to go to bed by 9 o'clock. Well, now at 9 o'clock, all of a sudden I get this little music, a lullaby, go to sleep. Well, I had it in the room the other day because we were, had to get up at 4 o'clock to leave on Saturday. And all of a sudden that came on and she had already fallen asleep and it woke her up. So that didn't work real well. All right. But I think the idea that he talks about not answering emails except twice a day and to take back all those clicks, to try and stop the attention residue problem that I have. I know I have because of that. So I like the idea of moving that. I like the idea of maybe not even picking up my phone until a couple hours in the day where you do have that deep work time. So, I know that's the first thing is I go out to get the coffee going. I pick out the phone. That's even before I go to the bathroom. Right. And so, the priorities, coffee, phone. So I think I got to stop that and push that off. If I could even get an hour before I pick it up, I think that would be a huge first step for me.
Bill, I have a question regarding that. So what did you do 20 years ago, first thing in the morning? Like how did that look different? And,
Oh yeah. Yeah. There was nothing. I still got up.
You read the newspaper.
Yeah. I read the newspaper. Yeah. And I used to be like a 3 newspaper guy, so I've always been an info junkie and that's part of the problem. And I start looking now at all the different news apps that I get up coming up every morning. There must be 10 of them. Oh, and they're all telling me the same thing.
Oh, Bill, you and me both, buddy.
Yeah. and so I kind of go, oh yeah, here's the New York Times. Oh, here's the Washington Post. Here's this, NPR. And kind of like, well, they're all telling me pretty much the same thing.
Doom scrolling is what they call it.
So I have a ton to get rid of. Yeah.
So with your job, like when we started Morning Tech Meeting, this kind of changed for me because I was not very active on social media prior to Morning Tech Meeting. I had accounts, but I didn't really look at them, or I'd post once in a blue moon and Larry make me.
Yeah.
And, all of a sudden I'm on all the time. That was a big change for me. And what I realized was, you know, I'd have to respond to posts that we had made. I was posting daily on multiple platforms, and then I'd have to go to the groups and this and the that. And what I found was it really was negative. It didn't bother me for the first 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And then I realized that to get to all the things that I needed to respond to, I had to see lots of things that I didn't really want to read.
Yeah.
And I've backed way off, and, you know, sorry, Larry, to the detriment probably of our marketing, but I couldn't handle it. It was so negative. It was
and a lot to do.
And I'm negative. Like, I have a negative worldview. You know, I'm a skeptic. Okay. So it wasn't making me feel better about people, which IRE was a struggle for me.
It was confirming.
But I don't want that. I want that. Yeah. You know, I want it to be better, right? I want to be better. So I, you know, I can only post a couple of days a week now.
Well, there's that the difference. And Bill, address this, please, for me, because a part of your job is that you have to be online and be active. Yeah. So it's your job to do this stuff. So you got to distance yourself, the social, the professional, and compelled to turn off your phone at certain times, but you're expected to have it on certain times.
Yeah.
So you've got to struggle a little bit with this
concept
of digital minimalism.
I'm trying to figure out a happy medium where I can market more and keep my sanity.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we have friends that run forums, and some are better than others, but the negativity that's floating around a lot of these forums was really bringing me down.
It's horrendous, right?
Whereas before I never read any of that stuff, and I just worried about what Larry and I were doing.
Really peaceful, wasn't it?
It was but you know, Larry made a great point. It's like, if we're to grow this business to where we want to grow it, I have to engage.
Yeah.
I have no choice.
Yeah.
So what do you do, Bill, on off hours when your boards and your tweets and all the stuff that you monitor are happening out of the 9-to-5 realm?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's the problem, is most of it's coming on after 5, you know, that's on there. And while John Dunn doesn't tell me that I have to do that at night, I do that at night. Now, I like to say it's because it's my job, but I must be one of those people that drives by the accident and rubbernecks. Right? I'm amazed sometimes, and I'll get into one of those where they got 64 posts that came after it.
Oh, you jump in on that, huh?
Well, no, I never jump in.
No, you're reading them all.
Yeah, I'm reading them all. And what you talk about, a waste of time.
See, I do that too. I have a tendency to do that too, because
you can't help it sometimes. Yeah.
Well, I'm also, I mean, and I think it's the same for you. You're kind of trying to figure out where some of your clients are coming from.
Yeah, yes.
And then you're realizing after the 64th comment that you read, that these guys aren't my clients.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, they've got all the memes, the same memes, or the guy sitting there with a box of popcorn going, oh, this is getting good, right? And you're just thinking, why am I in here?
Yeah. So, Larry, what are your strategies?
You just don't visit it during certain hours. And I don't have alerts coming up on my phone. I mean, I know it's there. And when I go in there for business, I just go for business. I stay off of the social part of it. I mean, but it sucks you in. It's not easy.
Hold on, bro. You know, I'll call myself out. I mean, full disclosure, I'll read the news for 4 hours straight. You know, I'll just go from article to article. But Larry likes TikTok.
I can't have that on my phone. It sucks me in. The worst. That was the worst.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I give myself 15 minutes, but that 15 minutes goes like that. And I'm like,
yes,
turn it off.
Well, and that 15 minutes can turn into 60 if you're not careful.
Yeah. I totally have been good about it, because I saw one time it was an hour. I'm on this thing. I was like, oh my gosh. And granted, I was laughing. I was having fun. It was cool.
Yeah.
But it was too much.
And I think that's what he's saying in the book, is that because you're going to try and change your life and all this, that does not mean you have to completely get rid of anything that you have, like your fun. But he says what you should do is you should schedule it like everything else. And you say, okay, you know, I've worked hard today and I deserve 20 minutes of TikTok. And you just say, okay, that's scheduled at 7:30 at night. Yeah. And you go out and you get off. You said you can't leave the life of a monk,
no.
You know, but you just gotta get little bits of it, you know, and it's like a little piece of chocolate. You know? So you can't eat the whole bag of Hershey's, but you can have one Hershey kiss if you want. All right.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, too, is if we really think about what we're really talking about is carving out a certain amount of hours each week to think.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the premise of all three books is that you need to make time to think not only about your business, but about your life. Because you need to know what your life looks like first before you can know what you want your business to look like so that they align. And I don't know. I wish they'd teach that in school, even. You know, I mean, nobody taught us that.
No, time to figure
that out. And those are the things that are being missed by nearly everyone. Yeah. Most people live very unintentionally. And, you know, if you own a business, you need to be very intentional to make it run well. And that's why so many businesses, that person, you know, Howard always says, are you a slave to your business?
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer in our industry is most people say yes.
I would say 90% at least.
So what do you think the common denominator is, Bill, for the people who have it figured out a little better than the rest of us?
I think they realize that the business is the business and you need to step away from it at times to make sure that you can continue growing it. And you can't grow it by continually doing the same things that you were doing 3 years ago if you want to move forward. It's just like exercise. You know, if you've been lifting 100 pounds, you know that you're not going to grow any more unless you bump that to 110. So how are you going to do this in your business when you realize that it's the running of the business, not the technical aspect, but the business hiring people? I was thinking about what are some of the things that our industry, you know, they may say, well, what is it I'm going to, you know, if I'm supposed to replace this with something else, what do I want to replace? Let's say I'm in the restoration business. I said, well, did you ever think maybe about just picking up the S500 and saying, I'm going to master this thing? You know, and maybe it's just an hour on Mondays and Wednesdays at 6 o'clock in the morning or something. I get up. I know it doesn't sound exciting, but the S500 is good. It help your business and it's going to keep you out of court, you know, or maybe you've always wanted to learn Spanish, especially in certain states in this country. Learning Spanish would be a huge benefit. Right. And so, you know, there's a lot of programs out there that you can just do it, but you got to focus on those also, you know. So I think, you know, those types of things, maybe just say, I always have troubles hiring people, which is probably the number one problem in our industry. So here's a good list of books that we believe that you should really start to read, study, just like Ryan Holiday, take your little 3x5 note cards, take all those notes and put them in there and all those different things. You know, and start to really focus on those areas. I think, where are the weaknesses in your business? And it may be your people. So how can I improve that? Well, my focus for the next year is to learn everything I can about what motivates people, especially what motivates people in the service business. So I think there's lots of opportunities, you know, or maybe a long-term thing. You decide you want to get your MBA. You know, you may say, oh, that's pretty big deal. But with everything online these days, if you say that is my goal, and we know that having that MBA will help run your business better, then that's your goal instead of watching Netflix for 2 hours tonight.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We all say we're too busy. But if we really did a time study of every 15 minutes of the day, we're not too busy to do this stuff.
I'd hate to see mine.
hate to see ours.
Yeah. Well, we get that little thing on our phone that tells you how much time you're on your phone each day. I go, no way.
Yeah.
So, the old 5 hours and 47 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you start looking at social media versus productivity.
Whatever.
It's not good. All right. Well, you know, I think, you know, to kind of finish up, the idea for all of us who, you know, own or have owned service businesses is don't be afraid to leave. I'm going to say this. Don't be afraid to leave. So many guys are so afraid to leave it in the hands of their team, even for an hour or two. And Larry and I, early on, we started going to Piranha Marketing really early in our career.
Yeah.
And we'd go out to Phoenix for 3 or 4 days. Yep. And we just say, look, you know, like, do the best you can. Yeah. Well, yeah. Anything that goes wrong, I mean, if something really goes wrong, call us.
Yeah.
But if not, just we'll figure it out when we come back. And then Larry and
I'll figure it out in the meantime.
And what happens is that they get it's an opportunity for them to step up and for them to get better and for them to problem solve without you, the owner, being there. And then all of a sudden, you know, Larry and I were doing that quarterly, and we did that for years. Every quarter we'd leave for, you know, essentially a week. Yeah. And what we saw was the longer it went, the more capable they all became. Howard calls it benign neglect. You know. And but the thing is that if they can do it for a week, Bill, then they can do it for a couple afternoons a week, every week, for you to go work on your business.
Yeah.
You have to stop trying to go be the hero and the fire. Larry has I don't know if you've ever seen Larry's fireman videos where he puts the fireman outfit on, you know, because you can spend your whole life putting out fires.
Yeah.
And I always call that the hero and the victim. You want to rush in and be the hero, the fireman, and put the fire out, and then go back and be like, I can't get anything done. These guys are bugging me all the time. You know, it's like, well, don't be the hero or the victim. You know, do it better. So I guess, you know, final word, at least for me, is you've got to just make everybody understand you need the time.
Yeah.
And you got to take it. And if something goes wrong, something goes wrong. The opportunity cost of whatever went wrong is probably much less than you doing that work.
Yeah, exactly. In the long run, it's the idea.
Yeah. Bill, any final words? Any final thoughts? I want to give you an opportunity to say your piece.
Just the one thing that I thought he says at the end of his digital minimalism book. He says, let me end by stating as clear as I can that digital minimalism isn't a rejection of technology and all of its amazing benefits and advantages. It's about being intentional. There's that word again. With our use of technology so that it helps us rather than hinders us from living the kind of life that we aspire to. And I think if they hear us talk, they're just going to say, oh, you just want us to get rid of all our emails and get rid of all social media. And no, just choose the things that help you get to where you want to get. And I can guarantee you that just spending 3 hours a day on social media is not going to get there unless you're looking for a job at Facebook.
Well, I don't even know if that would help you there.
Yeah, that's true.
They would be like, this guy doesn't get anything done.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting you say that, Bill. You know, one of my things, and I have kind of kicked the habit, I would waste my time on Instagram.
Yeah,
because I would follow like professional cyclists and skiers and, you know, all these guys,
CrossFit,
all the things that I'm interested in. And all of a sudden you're scrolling through and you're watching them.
Cats.
Larry's giving away all my dirty secrets. I could watch cat videos, Bill, for like 12 hours straight.
Oh my God.
I'm amazed that I'll run across one and I'll look. Make sure nobody's watching me watch it. You know? I'm sitting there laughing, you know.
So. But, you know, I was, you know, doing a fair amount of that. And I'm like, wait a minute. If I spend an hour a day looking at other people, and it was, you know how he talks about the artists, like you're checking to see what other people are doing to see if you can integrate it in your workout plan or your life.
Yeah.
So I would go under the guise of that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Trick himself. Justification.
Exactly, right? I'm doing research, and all of a sudden I'm like, I'm watching them live their life, but I'm not living mine.
Yeah,
like, I'm wasting my time with this.
Yeah.
You know, so, interesting. Schedule Larry, final thoughts from you.
Schedule your time properly. Create habits where you're not wasting your time on social media, and read the book. Cal Newport, Digital Minimalism. Yep. And you get the concepts that we're talking about. Wonderful.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
Yeah. Great suggestion, Bill. Very great.
All right. Eric, do you put links on these at the end or anything?
Larry does.
Yeah.
Okay. Larry does. The link that I sent you guys for the mind map, I thought after I read the book all of a sudden I read the book and then I looked at this thing. You know, it was like he did it for about 25 minutes or something. The first 6 minutes, he just talked about the tools that he used to create it. But once he got into what it was, I go, wow, he just told me everything about this book in like a very short time. Yep. And then you look at the mind map and it's just kind of like, I've got it pulled up on my large screen computer.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now with the trees and the sun. Yeah. Yeah.
Everything is just right there. You know, and that's I think I sent it to Eric. I said, I wish they had taught me how to do this in school when I was a kid. Yeah. I think this really is one of the most important.
We'll put that link in the notes for the podcast and everybody can take a look at that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And yeah, look at his book, Deep Work.
Yeah.
I like that too. So, Bill, thank you. Another great conversation.
My pleasure.
We'll have to come up with what next month's book's going to be.
Yep, I know it.
But go out and read and listen to Cal Newport. I think he can help all of our businesses and our lives be more fruitful. So, All right.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate you joining us today, Bill. Hopefully everybody enjoyed the podcast. We are out, and you guys enjoy your week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Nation podcast. For more information on what Eric and Larry do, please visit www.morningtechmeeting.com or visit us on our Facebook page, Blue Collar Consulting. Thank you and see you back here next week with another amazing episode of the Blue Collar Nation podcast.